Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And I'm never going to show.
All right, that's enough. Hour number two of your Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, December 31st. It's just moments away. But before we get into hour number two, we need to thank the following unions once again for sponsoring this program. First up, it's the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 in District 8. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, sponsor this program, as well as the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. A giant thank you to those unions for jumping on board and sponsoring our program. And of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you by our dear friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Hour number two, let's go. It is Tuesday, December 31st, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In this hour of the program, more marijuana talk. I'm going to get a contact high from all this talk. We're talking with Ben's good friend, Milo Samarja. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist, Ben Jarofsky.
Lisa Solomon has left the room. Lisa Solomon has left the building, but Milo Samarja is in the building. And he's not only my dear friend, I've known him probably longer than any other person in the city of Chicago, other than my wife. I met Milo shortly after I met my wife, because he was the guy who lived downstairs from me when I moved to Chicago back in 1981. And I think the last time I smoked a joint was with Milo in 1981.
On the front porch.
On the front porch. And the great Roger was sitting. We'll talk about that. When the great Roger was sitting behind us. But Milo is also an outstanding writer. We tease him, or I tease him, about being an expert on marijuana. But I urge everybody to read Schoolboy, his novel. He's Wasserman's Garden, another great novel that Milo wrote. So he's an outstanding writer. And he was my partner in crime for many years at the Third City, the funniest blog in the world. In addition to being an expert on all things marijuana, he is a fine writer. Before we get to bring Milo on, D, you got an update for me?
Absolutely, I do. We're doing our top 10 local stories of 2019, the top 10 Chicago and or Illinois stories. It's a little countdown we're doing. Yeah, countdown. No one does that, right, at the end of the year?
No, never.
Shows do that.
Never
at all.
Heard of that before.
No, this is super
so original.
This is super original, guys.
A wonderful concept.
I tell you, especially on these slow news days.
Yeah, wonderful concept.
So,
how did we come up with that?
I don't know, but we've been doing our top 10. We have reached number 7. So to do a quick recap here, number 10 was the Fair Tax Initiative getting on the ballot in 2020. Number 9, that damn alligator in the Humboldt Park Lagoon. And number 8, Confederate Railroad Gate. And it's time for number 7. The top 10 Chicago and or Illinois stories countdown continues.
Number 7.
Our number 7 story. Ben has no idea what it is.
I have no idea.
Here it is.
Okay.
We've taken a position so far, and the candidates have, through the process, a few have not, about on basically Medicare for All, which is we're going to eliminate 150 million people's health care, and we're going to provide health care for people that just come over the border. That is an untenable position for the general election.
Number 7, it's the post-Chicago mayoral life of Rahm Emanuel. Yes, Mayor Rahm. Leaving in general could be its own top story. But we sure did have a lot of fun on this program discussing his next endeavor. And no, we're not talking about his stupid bicycle adventures, no. ABC hired the former Chicago mayor as a political pundit. From chatting alongside and fist bumping with former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie on ABC this week, to even sharing his wisdom for all of us at ABC's 2020 Democratic presidential candidate debates.
You know, I think progressives are really where the energy is right now. And I think if you can expand the electorate, which is what we saw in 08, bringing out new voters, particularly brown and black voters, young voters, energize the base where you don't have to change your message much, right? Just go out and get those voters excited. We can win.
Hold on, Ron. I saw you shaking your head real quick. What's the rebuttal here?
Well, first of all, Donald Trump is going to do a great job turning out our vote. And in 08, as well as in 92, 96, and in 12, is because both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama brought other people, not just people in the party, other people to the party.
It's our seventh top Chicago and or Illinois story of 2019. It's Rahm the Pundit.
Yeah, I remember this. Oh, my goodness. That was an excerpt of Rahm. And who is he debating? I can't remember who the woman was that he was debating. I agree with the woman 100%. And I completely disagree, big shock there, with Rahm Emanuel. There's connection to the larger discussion of marijuana that we're having today. Rahm Emanuel, the worldview of Rahm Emanuel, as it applies to Democratic politics, has been the prevailing view of the mainstream of the Democratic Party really since the 1972 George McGovern campaign. And that is, we are going to move to the right. That's the way to win an election in this country. You go to the right. And so that means Democrats consistently follow Republicans. As Republicans move further to the right, Democrats move further to the right. The center moves further to the right. And things that values that Democrats supposedly stand for get thrown out the window. So I see this all the time, Milo. I've seen this my entire adult life. I've seen Democrats walk away from issues that they should believe in. Health care for all. Just a universal concept. Milo and I talk about this all the time because we'll talk about this later. He served in Vietnam, and as a result, he gets great health care through the VA.
Yes.
All right? Great health care for the VA.
I've got no complaints about the VA.
Yeah. So, Milo, please explain to me why in the world you have to put your life in limbo. You have to, like, be threatened with your existence to be wiped out before you get some kind of good health care. What a bargain they're striking with us.
Well, we weren't fortunate enough to be born in Norway or Sweden or some other civilized country. We live in the United States.
Yeah.
So,
and in the United States, there is not universal health care. And this, the ROMs of the Democratic Party have been arguing for the last 30 years, no, don't push health care. It's too controversial. It's too socialist. It doesn't poll well with swing voters in suburban Virginia. It doesn't poll well with swing voters outside of Milwaukee. We're going to lose the swing states. And so the Democratic Party moves to the right following the Republican Party. So now here we are in 2020. We're heading right into the 2020 election against Donald Trump, and we have two essential strategies that the Democrats have to decide whether they're going to follow. They're going to go with Bernie, who advocates like health care for all, college education for all, just like these basic New Deal programs that are like straight out of the FDR playbook, or are we going to go to the Clinton playbook? The Rahm Emanuel playbook. No. We don't want to go too far. We don't want to be too radical. You know, look, so we'll have health care for that. I never understood this, Milo. Like, Clinton and Rahm came up with health care for kids, but not their parents. What, parents don't get sick? It's not going to be bad to the kid if the parent can't work? If the parent can't? Made no freaking sense. But I'm sure they did some kind of, you know, poll of swing voters in suburban Virginia, a focus group. That's what they do. They do focus groups, and they go, oh, this is the winning strategy. And God forbid they encourage the base to vote. That's something they're very scared of. They don't want the base to vote because could you imagine? And when Rahm got elected mayor of the city of Chicago, only about 35% of the people voted. Could you imagine if the other 65% voted? He wouldn't have gotten elected in the first place. So You're bringing back all those memories by playing
that. That's the point. It's a countdown to remember the year.
Oh, my God. Remember Rom the Pundit, man.
That's number seven, Rom the Pundit. Coming up before we get out of here, we are going to do...
Wait, Milo wants to say something. Yes.
I was going to mention the dentist to quit pissing Ben off.
Never. Coming up, before we get out of here, we are going to do...
Number six.
Oh, yeah. And then after that, we're going to do 5 through 1 as a Benny J bonus. And you can download it at both Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Reader websites, or wherever else you download your favorite podcast. But before we get out of here, number six on our top 10 Chicago and or Illinois stories of 2019.
All right. Very good. All right. Milo Samardzija, welcome back, Cotter. You were on the old show I had before I got fired. And now you're here. So welcome back, Milo.
I expect you to get fired again pretty soon, too.
Yeah, I got my bags packed over there. It's always in the corner. You never know. You never know.
All right.
Pulling no punches.
This is very disappointing. I was told that there was going to be a marijuana blowout here. I stopped at Jewel, got a bunch of Doritos. And
I know. Our last guest took everything with her. She had all that
Milo,
stuff.
Milo, did you take that joint you left? You brought it?
And all we're going to do is talk about it.
I think there's sprinklers here, Milo. I told you. See, that's a sprinkler there. If you light up a joint.
Yeah, that's a different type of smoke.
Yeah, then Ben will get fired.
Yeah,
again.
That will. Guarantee. You want to see me get fired? Light up a joint. All right, Milo Samardzija. You're a writer. As I said, Schoolboy, I urge everybody to check it out. You could still purchase it on Amazon and Wasserman Garden. Two completely different books. Before we talk about Reefer, let's just talk about how completely different these books are. Schoolboy is a coming-of-age story.
About a young gambler.
Talk about this. Go ahead.
Oh, just a coming-of-age story about a young gambler and the twists and turns that life has in store for him.
Yeah. Milo, in addition to being a consumer of marijuana over the years, is a hell of a gambler. Great poker player. I'm getting all his secrets out there in the open.
I may be the worst poker player ever, but when my friends have a game, they send a cab for me.
Yeah.
That sounds like something a poker player would say.
I know. Yeah. Milo was in the apartment before me, the downstairs one. I moved in after Milo. But there was this thing that you used to get involved with back in the day called the World Series of Poker, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Or you had some kind of name for it? Like it would be these blowout poker games. And I would see, so it would be a Saturday night. I'd see a Saturday, well, you going to the poker game? Yeah, I'm going to go. There was like a math professor there and a couple of lawyers who I probably wouldn't want to hire for anything.
Benny, you don't want to play poker with lawyers because I remember sometimes sitting at a table with 3 or 4 lawyers, and every time there'd be a question about the game, everyone had to have their say. They brought up precedent. They listed previous games that played in bathrooms in Milwaukee 40 years ago. So I would suggest not playing.
No, don't play with lawyers.
Don't play with lawyers.
Or math professors. Yeah. And Wasserman Gardens is a parable.
It's an allegory about the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Milo, you're born and raised. No, you weren't born. You were raised in Gary, Indiana.
Yeah, I was raised in Gary, Indiana. I moved there from Milwaukee when I was about 5 years old.
Okay. All right. So, and then you were sent to Vietnam.
Well, you know, since ostensibly I'm here to talk about weed, I want to... Just a bit of a history. I smoked my first joint in Sandy Berdow's basement in 1967. Mm. And a year later, I got drafted and sent to, you know, after training and everything, I got sent to Vietnam. So where I got to sample much finer strains of weed.
Yeah.
That were available in Gary at the time.
All right, let's talk about that. 1967, you were just out of high school or still in high school?
I believe I was a senior in high school.
Senior in high school.
I graduated in 67.
All right, so think about this. So how was it advertised? You know what I mean? Like, what did they say to entice you to get you to smoke that first joint?
Well, you know, 67 was kind of an idea. You know, 66 is when... the culture kind of exploded and hippies became part of the landscape. Mm-hmm. And marijuana, you know, we were the boys and Gary were used to marijuana. There was, you know, the city ran three shifts. It was all factory work. So guys used to take all kind of drugs, just stay awake and things like that. And that's why, for one reason, I thought Gary was the greatest town in the world. Because at any time of the day or night, yeah. you could get a breakfast, a drink. You could get laid if you wanted. You know.
Sometimes all three at once.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But when the hippie thing happened, you know, the summer of love and all that, mm-hmm. You know, the word got out, and you know, suddenly there was a little reefer around town. Mm-hmm. So you know, we tried it, and thank God for the Serrano brothers who provided most of it.
The Serrano brothers, immortal Gary residents. Now, Milo, these are basically working class kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Steel mill kids,
yes.
Your dad worked in a steel mill.
He worked in an auto plant, but, you know, it was about a mile away from the steel mill.
So the Serrano brothers were kids you went to high school with?
Yes. Cisco Serrano and his brother Sammy.
Sammy Serrano. And so what did they go, hey, Milo,
I don't remember the exact circumstance, but I think my friend Sandy, who passed away a few years ago, he was good friends with the Serrano brothers, and they provided, hey, so you want to try this? And of course, you know, I said yes.
And do you remember it? Do you remember the experience?
No, I remember just being in the basement and smoking and getting a little silly, and that's all I remember. It's so long ago.
This would have been before the Nixon administration started cracking down on
marijuana. Before the Nixon administration.
Yes. Right, okay. So what would you say I don't mean to cut in on the interview.
No, go ahead.
But what would you say was the contrast between pre- and post-Nixon administration war on drugs? Like, what was the feeling? Did that change your interaction with weed at all? Or
No, not at all. Because like I say, when I smoked my first joint in 67, and then a year later, I was drafted in the Army. Mm-hmm. So I spent 2 years in the military, and 14 months of that was overseas. And in Southeast Asia, the getting hold of marijuana was not a problem. It was everywhere. And, you know, in most places, we used to go to, in Vietnam, we'd get it from Buddhist monks. They'd have bushel baskets of it. You give them $5 and they grab a handful and just give it to you.
And everybody was smoking pretty much over there?
Well, I don't know if everybody was smoking, but as we all do, we surround ourselves with like-minded people. So my crowd was smoking, but I, you know, there were some guys that were into alcohol, and there was heroin addicts and all sorts of fun things.
And the obvious point, it helped get you through that experience.
You needed some escape from the reality of it. And sometimes getting a hold of hard liquor was difficult. We always had access to warm beer, mm-hmm. but marijuana was usually the drug of choice for most people.
Milo, I don't think I've ever asked you this question. Maybe I have, but I don't remember the answer because I was high at the time. But sorry, I just love that joke so much. Literally the last time I smoked was with Milo on his front porch. Roger, our Milo's dear friend from way back in, and Gary was sitting behind us. And that's the first time I heard the word fiduciary. It's one of my great moments in my life. We were talking about the Cubs. And Milo, lifelong Cub fan, but he announced at this moment that he was through with the Cubs. Milo, remember this? Because the new owners, God, it was the Tribune had just purchased them, and
they fired Ernie Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, Ernie Banks. Kids don't know. He was Mr. Cub.
Oh, you know Ernie Banks?
Oh, come on.
They've got a statue.
Yeah, they've got a statue.
Come on.
Yeah. They fired him because what? They were too cheap to.
They're just too cheap. Look, you know, the Boston Red Sox used to pay Ted Williams a few grand to go down to spring training, you know, walk around, talk to the young guys, shake a few hands, sign some autographs.
Yeah.
I don't get that about Chicago teams. But I feel like they're so cheap.
They wouldn't do that for Ernie Banks.
Yeah. They cut Ernie Banks from the payroll. And so Milo announced that it's still this memory. So Milo and I were sitting on the front porch. It's me, Milo, and Roger. And Milo and I are sitting at the front stoop. And Roger's behind us in the shadows. And I kind of forgot that he was even there. And this joint is going around. And Milo goes, "That's it. I'm through with the Cubs. They fired Mr. Cub. They fired Mr. Cub because they wouldn't pay him the money." And that was, you were using George Steinbrenner. George Steinbrenner with the Yankees. He still has Mickey Mantle coming around, Whitey Ford coming around. "That's it. I'm through with the Cubs. They're too cheap to pay Mr. Cub." And from the back comes the voice of Roger. And he goes, "Well, I think they have a fiduciary responsibility." Oh, I'm like, Milo and I are like, "Fiduciary?" I'm like, "What does that mean?"
Benny, we should have beaten him up right there. We just let him get away with it.
Yeah, we did. We let him get it anyway. That was the last time. That was it. I was off. When Roger knew a word I didn't know, I was embarrassed. So, Milo, what's your theory about why the resistance to marijuana all these years?
Well, a lot of it is racial. In the Southwest, it was associated mainly with the Mexican population. Mm-hmm. And in the American South, it was mainly associated with the black population, yeah. Jazz musicians, other shady types. But I was going to give a little bit more background on my use.
Go ahead.
I came back from Vietnam. I was a pothead maybe through all of my 20s. Mm-hmm. I smoked basically every day. But I got married late in life, 31. Mm-hmm. And then I had a couple of children, and I quit. I gave it up. And for a space of about 10, 15 years, I would smoke maybe one joint a year. Maybe with some friends having a few drinks or something. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, I was at the veterans' house, but I was complaining about lack of sleep and just some issues left over from my service in the Army. And veteran said, "Try one of these." I said, "Well, I know what that is." And he says, no, this stuff will help you sleep, because I was having trouble sleeping. And I said, "Where'd you get this?" He said, "I got a medical marijuana card." And I said, "Well, okay." Well, I took the gifted joint home. Smoked most of it, slept like a baby. I was just so happy to be, to go to bed and not wake up until 8 hours later, 7 hours later. And so I decided to get a medical marijuana card, and I got it about, I think it was about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now I've become a pothead. I mean, after
circle of life.
Circle of life. Circle of life.
15, 20 years without smoking it, and now, in my old age, I'm becoming a damn pothead.
Yeah, and so what? You've discovered medicinal benefits?
Well, for me, I've got some aches and pains and some trouble sleeping and things like that, just some issues. Associated with age, probably as much as anything else.
Yeah.
But it helps.
Now, Milo, did you realize the medicinal benefits of marijuana back in the 70s and the 80s when you were smoking it?
No, the only benefit that I noticed was that it made me feel really good.
Yeah.
So that was it.
Yeah.
But now when you go to the marijuana dispensaries, refined the stuff so much that they've got stuff to help you sleep, for your appetite, for stimulation, there's a dozen different categories they can provide some weed for.
Yeah. We were talking about that earlier, that my wife and I went up to Washington State, visited a dispensary, and it was like you were at a walk-in pharmacy.
Yeah.
Like they gave you all different types of options.
Yeah.
It's an incredible world.
Yeah.
Milo and I, for years, ran the Third City blog, and on a regular basis, pretty much every day, we would get on the phone together and we would come up with an advertisement of the day. And this is kind of the twisted mind of Milo. One of the ads was for Nickelbag Bernie. I have since used, it was Milo's creation. I got to give the man credit. He came up with Nickelbag Bernie, the dealer, and he would, the ad would be, you know, Nickelbag would be at some parking lot, and we would come up with the, like the Dunkin' Donuts on Ashland or whatever, and we would just make up little sites. And we had a partner for a while. I was worried. Remember? That was gonna sue us. We make up some. He's now appearing at a Dunkin' Donuts on Western, and the guy we got. You know, maybe.
So I think the line was Nickelbag Bernie now working out of the parking lot at the Dunkin' Donuts on Western.
Yeah, that
was. And so our partner was afraid. Yeah, was afraid that Dunkin' Donuts was going to sue us.
Yeah.
I thought that it'd be great to get sued by anybody.
But on the other hand, they may build up business. Anyway, Nickelbag Bernie. And that conjures up, we're going to get into this. You got an essay I'd really want people to hear you read. But before we do that, the notion of a weed dealer, you've probably been dealing with weed dealers. Well, you're most, like you said, going back to the 60s in Gary, throughout the 70s in the city of Chicago. I'll talk a little bit about weed dealers as just a type, Milo, as opposed to now dispensaries. You've purchased from both.
Can I read a couple paragraphs?
Yes.
This is a blog I wrote for the Third City about 8 years ago, I think, or so. But here's just a few paragraphs I'm going to read. It does my heart good to know that there are some places in this nation where a guy can smoke a little weed without worrying about getting his ass tossed in jail. But there's one thing that bothers me about buying marijuana legally. It's the mechanics of actually purchasing it. According to some reports I've read, there are not enough marijuana outlets in Colorado. In Denver, people have to wait in lines, sometimes for more than an hour, just to get their hands on some reefer. I don't like the idea of standing in line for an hour waiting to buy some weed from a clerk working in a store that probably has a name like Mr. Giggles. I'd rather get my marijuana the old-fashioned way from my neighborhood dealer. In the late 70s and early 80s, my connection was a guy named Gary, who lived on Sheffield near Wrigley Field. Whenever I'd get down to Seeds and Stems, I'd stop by Gary's place. Hanging out at Gary's was a pleasant way to waste a couple of hours. There was always good music on the stereo, stimulating conversation, plenty of herb to sample. He enjoyed having people over, was a good host, generous with food and drink. I also met quite a few interesting people and made some lasting friendships while sharing joints in Gary's living room. When I left Gary's place, I usually had a smile on my face. And that, my friends, is the way a civilized person, a real gent, buys his weed. When I was a pothead, I did things the right way. I shopped locally, patronized a small business, and kept my money in the neighborhood.
Yes, very true. I think about that. Shop locally, keeping the money in the neighborhood, taking care of Gary. I think I knew Gary.
I'm sure you met him a few times.
I think I met him at your house.
Every once in a while, he'd make a delivery.
Do you think something's lost?
Not really. I mean, the odds are that when the sale of marijuana is institutionalized, the product will be better. There won't be shortfalls. You won't have to worry about going to your dealer and saying, hey, this isn't the same stuff I got last time, you know, that type of thing. So I think in the long run, it's just better to have it institutionalized.
I suppose it's better, although I do kind of love the concept of Nickelbag Bernie. There will always be Nickelbag Bernies among us. Milo, you mentioned...
Well, you know, Benny, I was leaving the dispensary. I use the dispensary on Clark Street just north of Grace. Mm-hmm. And I was walking out of there, and there was like a 14, 15-year-old kid stopped me. He was waiting outside the door, and he said, mister. And he had a fistful of, you know, fives and tens and 20s. And he said, mister, can you go and get something for me? And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. I'm sorry. And then I got kind of angry. I said, you know, how old are you? And he didn't say. He just stared at me. And I said, you know, when I was your age, I knew two or three places I could buy it. I said, the kids these days have no ambition.
No drive, man.
No innovation.
On the other hand, I gotta give the kid credit. Like, it's like the old days, you'd stand outside a liquor store when you're 50. Hey, could you?
Same concept.
That's
so awkward. Whatever happened to networking? You gotta network.
Yeah,
network.
Kids today.
Yeah.
Miley, you're talking about smoking reefer back in Vietnam when you're in Vietnam. Black and white GIs share the joints, or was that segregated as well?
No, you know, I was in the infantry, and when we were out in the field on patrols and things, there was a sense of brotherhood that you didn't find back in the rear areas. In the rear area, there were even race riots in Vietnam, but out in the field, we shared everything.
Mm-hmm.
Also, out in the field, we didn't get stoned that often because you know, that was kind of a tricky situation.
Yeah.
But the one thing I do remember is that, and this goes to one of our favorite musicians, Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
He people in Vietnam, all music played a big part in everybody's lives, and white guys would listen to country music. The Latino guys would listen to, you know, mariachi. Black guys would listen to Motown, basically. But whenever the black and the white and the Latino people got together to party, it was always Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, no, I'm with you. Jimi Hendrix was the man. Yeah. And Milo wrote a tribute to Jimi Hendrix that we used to play. We used to run on the 4th of July or thereabouts because it was the ultimate patriotic tribute to the great Jimi Hendrix. I believe is James Marshall Hendrix.
James Marshall Hendrix, formerly of the 101st Airborne.
Yes, but they asked him to leave. Did you know that, Mike?
Well, you know, some people aren't ready for the military.
Yeah,
is that a dishonorable discharge?
No, I don't think. I never heard of this before. They asked him to leave.
No, there are several types of discharges in the military.
Yeah,
there's honorable, dishonorable, general, and Jimmy. Mm. Jimmy got, believe he got a general discharge. I'm not sure about it, but I believe. Because a dishonorable, you have to do something, some serious misconduct.
Yeah.
Jimmy just wasn't a good soldier. And I have a good friend in California. His son wanted all his life to be a soldier. And he joined the military. His father went down with him to see him off and everything. The kid was back in 2 weeks. Wow. And the Army kicked him out. He just wasn't fit, wasn't the right type of person to be in the military.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with Jimi Hendrix.
I think I read somewhere, Milo, that his superior, one of the superiors said all he wants to do is play the guitar. Milo, what did they call you? Mentioned that people on the front lines and the people in the rear. What they call?
REMS.
REMS, yeah. What did that stand for?
Rear echelon motherfucker.
Yeah, I always like it. You could swear on a podcast, Mel. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to close down the show with a trivia contest. We're going to pit Joshua. We're going to have a millennial versus a baby boomer. Milo versus Joshua. I'm going to drag Dennis into this as well. This is something that I saw in the New York Times. I said, oh, this is perfect for my show, Milo. It ran on Sunday. And what the rally playlists say about the candidates. So there's all these Democratic candidates running for president of the United States. And before they go on stage at a campaign event, music comes over the loudspeakers. So you got Joseph Biden, Joey B., Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, Dennis's favorite candidate. And
I was getting ready to say that's your favorite candidate.
He's not very popular in this show, Milo. Mm-hmm. Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, Julian Castro.
Benny, I still miss Comrade Hall.
Yeah, Gary boy.
Gus Hall.
Anyway, I think he was running as a communist in 1972. Anyway, so
he didn't do too well.
The only one I could tell you that I did really well with, big surprise here, was Joe Biden's playlist, which is all baby boomer music. But the other ones kind of left me lost. So we're going to bring on, we're going to close down with a trivia contest, and the winner will get a blue Mustang. We're going to have the blue Mustang delivered to his house. We'll be right back after this.
We're not giving anything away.
The Ben Jarofsky Show is supported by Northwestern University's part-time master's program in literature and liberal studies. Students learn from dynamic and diverse faculty as they build advanced skills for critical analysis, writing, and research. Evening classes are held on Northwestern's Evanston and Chicago campuses. The spring quarter application deadline is January 15th. Learn more at sps.northwestern.edu/masters. Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show. Mr. Jarofsky Show. For the final time this year, I've been getting high with Milo. Guilty.
You know, this show is going to ruin my reputation.
Mine too. Take us home.
By the way, Milo Samardzija in the studio, not only the outstanding writer, I urge everybody to check out Schoolboy and Wasserman Garden, two completely different books. The man has a lot of versatility. Not only is he an excellent blogger, very funny, has always something witty and funny to say. Not only does he know a lot about reefer, but as you could tell, the man plays a mean piano. That's Milo on the keyboard there, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wow.
Good God, is he good.
You didn't say anything about my tap dancer.
Oh, yeah, he's a great tap dancer, too.
Oh, we didn't tell you about our special bonus interview, tap dance bonus interview.
Yeah, tap dancing with Milo. Anyway, before we close down the show with the great trivia contest, D, you got an update? One last update.
Absolutely,
of 2019.
I do. Absolutely. We're doing our top 10 Chicago and or Illinois stories of 2019. We're going to do our number 6 story here in moment. But I want to remind everybody that 5 through number 1, it's going to be available as a Benny J bonus interview. We'll try and post it tonight, about 7 or 8 o'clock tonight, for everybody to listen to. So make sure you download that at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites or wherever else you download your favorite podcasts. We'll recap our the ones that we've went through so far. Like I said, we've made it to number 6, but in at number 10 was Governor Pritzker's Fair Tax Initiative getting on the 2020 ballot. Number 9 was that damn alligator in the Humboldt Park Lagoon. Number 8, Confederate Railroad Gate. Number 7, Rahm Emanuel, the ABC pundit. So, yes, people, it doesn't really take a mathematician to know what's next. Coming up next, that's right.
It's so hard to be here in silence with that music.
It's number 6 in the number 6 story. Yeah. Well, I don't have any audio for it, but Ben Jarofsky, our host, as soon as I mention what number 6 is, I know it's going to come right out of your mouth. Oh, D-man, don't get me started.
Yeah.
Because number 6 is the Lincoln Yards development deal.
Ooh. Don't get me started.
Well, the Lincoln Yards development deal was passed in April through the city council. Ben, take it from there.
All right. I'm going to focus. Okay, Milo, I'm just going to focus. I talked about earlier how we just passed a budget on the federal level, $768 billion for defense. Basically, a blank check was given to Donald John Trump to spend as ever, at any way he wants with your federal tax dollars. At the same time, some of the biggest corporations, some of the wealthiest corporations were given a tax break by Donald John Trump and the Republicans in the Senate, which reduced their tax liability in some cases to zero. So somebody, people, are paying the taxes that are going to a blank check for the military. And yet, we don't have money in the city of Chicago, Milo, for teachers. We don't have money for nurses in our public schools. We don't have money for pensions for police officers and firefighters. Somehow or other, we have 700, I can't remember if it's 38 or 68 billion, 736. What difference does it make ultimately, you know?
It's a few billion.
It's a few billion here and there for 1 year, Milo. That's it. 1 year of defense spending. So, on a local level, take that to the local level, we had $1.3 billion to underwrite the cost of an upscale development in an already gentrifying area where even I, Milo, can make a good living developing property. Even I, even you, Milo, you, me, and Roger, smoking reefer on the front porch, can make money at Lincoln Yards, okay? So I just could not help myself. All year long, Milo, I was railing and ranting about this, how a city that calls itself a civilized city could claim we don't have enough money to pay pensions for our retired firefighters who put their life on the line every freaking time they run into a burning building, to our retired police officers who put their lives on the line patrolling the streets of Chicago, to retired teachers who like teach us stuff, nurses, etc. We don't have enough money for pensions, Milo, but we got $1.3 billion just to give to some rich developer to develop land that you and I could develop, Milo, and make money. Wow, high. And I'm just like, it just, it's property tax dollars that come right out of your property tax, folks. Milo, maybe I should go back to smoking marijuana because the world makes no freaking sense. And the older I get, the less sense it makes. We claim we're broke when it comes to teachers and nurses and schools, but we have $736 billion for the military. I don't even know what they're spending the money on, Milo. I don't think they do. And $1.3 billion for Lincoln Yards. So I kind of tied Lincoln Yards to the military expenditure. So
there's probably a lot of people in the military that would agree with that, that there's excessive spending.
Listen, man. One of the things I saw Trump say, he gave a raise to soldiers.
Well, you know, he's just paying them back for the money he stole from them when they were from that veterans thing. So, you know, it's
breaking
you. Mm-hmm.
That is correct. That's when Donald John Trump, in his infinite wisdom, said, "Hey, I know what to do. I'm going to raise money and use it to help vets." And it's a charity. People donated their money, and he ended up using it for political reasons. He bought a portrait of himself. He got caught. Now in New York, he's not allowed to. This is your president, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. This is the man you elected president. They said, you can't run a charity anymore, but it's okay. You can't run a charity, but you can run the United States of America.
Wait, weren't we talking about Lincoln Yards?
Oh, I'm sorry. It all comes together, man.
I'm telling you, once he gets going, who knows where the hell it ends up.
With that is one of the worst deals.
That is a terrible deal.
Then he's got a plan.
There's a plan. It all comes together.
With a 31-14 vote, Chicago City Council approved the tax increment financing, a.k.a. TIF. Ben, please, just let me finish this. TIF plan that allows Sterling-based $6 billion mixed-use development to move forward, but not before requiring the developer to make additional concessions. Lincoln Yards stands to gain $900 million from its TIF subsidy, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. It's our sixth top story of 2019, the Lincoln Yards development deal. So we have five more top stories to go, but we're going to continue our conversation and have a little quiz here with Milo and Joshua. So we're going to have our top five available for download. Go subscribe to the Ben Jarofsky Show. Go find it. Go hit play. Listen to it. 5 through 1, the top Illinois stories of 2019. Go download it.
All right. Very good. Before we give the quiz, which I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to do the quiz, Joshua, why don't you tell folks about your podcast, how they can follow you, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun these past couple hours. My name is Joshua Smizer de Leon, born and raised in Chicago, specifically the Humble Park neighborhood. Seen a lot of changes in that neighborhood. Seen a lot of changes on La Isla, on the island in Puerto Rico. So this past August, I decided to launch a new project. It's in collaboration with the Puerto Rican Cultural Center on a strip of land in Humboldt Park. It's in between both giant steel Puerto Rican flags. It's called Paseo Boricua. It's Division Street Western area. Got a studio in there. We call it the Paseo Podcast. And the ultimate mission is just to highlight stories by, from, and about the Puerto Rican community. So that might be people here in the diaspora. That might be people on the island. It might be something that's a bit lighter, like talking about Puerto Rican cuisine or Puerto Rican comic book characters and representation. Or we might talk about divestment. Our last episode, we just had the Harvard and Yale students on to talk about that big football game protest they have. In Chicago, we have... We fluctuate between the third and fourth largest Puerto Rican population in the country, in the United States. In fact, the number of Puerto Ricans in the United States outnumbers, that we double the size of the number of Puerto Ricans on the island. So how is what's happening in Chicago, especially in Paseo Boricua, an ever gentrifying neighborhood, how is what we have done since the 70s, how can that serve as a model for other cultural communities? So... From my perspective, you got about 23% of people that are on, that are listening to podcasts. That's the same amount of people that are on Twitter. So let's get some more representation out there. Let's highlight different things that are specific to certain cultures. Let's create those niche audiences and promote the good things that are happening in our backyards.
And how, it's, did you say it's a weekly podcast?
It's a weekly podcast. I don't know how I'm surviving at this point. I work at DePaul University. I teach there. I'm actually finishing up my master's. I'll be done this June, and I'm doing this weekly thing. It's a labor of love, but... it's very life-giving.
That's the best kind of labors.
Yes. Amen.
And let's give a shout out to your colleague Ivan, who's probably listening.
From San Lorenzo, from the same hometown.
Give us the website, the information. Where can people find it? People listening right now, take notes.
All right. So here's the notes for y'all. So paseomedia.org. Visit there. All the episodes are up there. It's a very simple website. Once I get some more funds, we're gonna blow it all out.
Spell that website.
PASEO media.org. Again, that's PASEO media.org. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Paseo Podcast, PASEO Podcast, PASEO Podcast. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at JS DeLeon, and DeLeon is spelled DELEON. DELEON.
That's correct.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Robert Mueller.
Mueller. You.
I don't know what happened to my Mueller report.
Yeah.
The Mueller report.
It's over here under my table. Oh, I need you focused, all right?
Milo, I have the Mueller report.
I'll grab it.
I mean, just show Milo the Mueller. He doesn't believe I actually have a copy of the Mueller.
There
you go. All right.
That's impressive. I've never actually seen a hard copy of that. Right.
Yeah. So let's see where the bookmark is. Page 2. Oh, wow. That's all you've read?
I'm appalled, but I'm not surprised.
I do enjoy the Mueller report. It's good reading. All right, so I saw this in the New York Times, and I just said, I got to bring this on the show. I'm going to keep this around and have fun with this for the next week or so. So as I said, all the Democratic candidates for president, when they do a rally, they have a playlist, and music plays to fire up their listeners. And the playlist says something about both the presidential candidates, their generation, their preference of music, and who they think will fire up whoever is in the audience. I was looking at this list, and Milo and Joshua and Dennis, and I have to say I was a little embarrassed. I knew almost none of the songs of anyone under the age of 70. Joe Biden's list, I was really good with Joe Biden's list. Elizabeth Warren, she's 70. I was really good with her. Not so good with Dennis's favorite candidate, Mayor Pete.
Love him.
Milo, Pete Buttigieg is not a very big fan. He's too like he should be running in the Republican primary, Milo. Anyway, Pete Buttigieg, just teased Dennis. He's not really a Pete Buttigieg fan. And I didn't,
And I'm not a doctor. No one calls me White Lightning.
Now, Bernie Sanders' list. Let's start with Bernie Sanders' list, okay? No, let's start with Joey Biden's list. All right, so here's how we're going to do this. Joshua, I'm going to give you a song.
Oh, my gosh, I'm going to suck at this game.
I don't think so. I think you'd be a lot more knowledgeable than than you think.
Okay.
And then tell me if you know the name of the song. And then if you don't, I will turn to Milo because he's our baby boomer and he should know the name of the song. So here we go. First song. The Wait by Aretha Franklin. The Wait.
Mm. Do I have to sing it or do I have to know it?
You actually know it?
No, I well, probably if I heard it played, I'd probably.
Yeah, what's the game here? Did yeah, you what say is, if you what, know you well, know the song?
Okay, for instance, I'll give you an example of a song he knows.
I'm bad with names. I know.
High Hopes, Panic at the Disco. Do you know that song?
That I do know.
All right, now yes. We get it.
So you can like easily lie and say yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah, but
I know Aretha Franklin. Does that do I get 50?
Yes,
points?
That gets you 10 points. All right, Milo, educate this youngster about The Wait.
I believe it that was originally recorded by the band.
That is correct.
Okay. Ooh. And written by Robbie Robertson.
That is correct. And the opening line is, I went down to Nazareth.
I pulled in.
Nazareth.
I was feeling about a half past 10.
Yes. I know that song. Yeah, that's a great song. Yeah.
Looking for a place. All pre-show ideas by me before we start.
It's like looking for a place to hang my head.
Okay.
Okay,
you do know that song. I just need a little help. Now, here's the interesting thing. Joe Biden loves that song so much that he has two versions of the song.
Or else he forgot that he had one version already.
Now, this version, the only other person in the studio knows this version is Milo. I can guarantee you that. And this is a great version. A saxophone player who died, I want to say, in the late 60s, maybe 1970. He's been dead a while. King Curtis did The Wait. You know that version, Milo?
I don't know the version, but I know who King Curtis
Tell
is.
Tell folks who King Curtis
is. Well, he was an East Coast musician and one of the first people that ever hired Jimi Hendrix, I think.
Wow. Gosh. That's what marijuana will do for you, ladies and gentlemen.
It's that long-term memory.
It's that long. Milo and I are the only one. King Curtis died, I want to say, in 67. He's a great saxophone player. And yes, I do believe that Jimi Hendrix played with him. Mm-hmm. All right, so now we'll flip the switch. We'll go to Pete Buttigieg's list. And this is a song. All right, Milo, do you know this song? Actually, Pete Buttigieg has got some old people's song on here. Pete Buttigieg has Cut to the Feeling. Do you know that song, Cut to the Feeling? Milo Samardzija.
No, I don't.
Joshua, do you know?
Who's the artist?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the song.
I don't know. Dennis?
Hell no.
I don't know why you put that on there, but okay.
But it's his song.
Yeah.
Can you sing it for
us? Call Me Maybe? No, I could not sing it.
What about High Hopes? Can you sing High Hopes?
I could, but I don't want to try.
I've never heard of High Hopes.
I don't like that song.
Milo, have you ever heard of High Hopes?
Yeah, I think Frank Sinatra did.
No, that's a different. That's a boomer High Hopes. No. We're talking High Hopes.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. That's the Frank Sinatra version. Yeah. High Hopes by a group called Panic at the Disco. Have you ever heard that group, Milo?
No.
Not a huge fan.
I believe Milo has.
I may have heard them, but they didn't register.
I believe Milo actually has a Panic at the Disco tattoo on his ankle.
Yeah, he showed that to me the other day. That's right.
On my butt.
On his butt. So, that's the song he plays as his walk-up song for 10 trivia points. Wow. Joshua.
What's up?
Believe it or not, another candidate in the race for president as a Democrat also had High Hopes as a walk-up song. Name that candidate.
In the current race.
In the current race.
And they're no longer in the race.
I did not say that.
This might be a trick question.
Currently in the race. Okay. Not that Frank Sinatra High Hopes.
Yeah.
But the Panic at the Disco High Hopes.
Andrew Yang?
Negatory.
Klobuchar. I'm gonna throw out all of them.
For what it's worth, I don't know if this is an editorial comment by the New York Times, but they don't have Andrew Yang or Klobuchar.
Interesting.
Julian Castro, got rid of it. I guess someone said, "Hey, boss, Buttigieg just got it. We need our own song." Mm-hmm. So anyway, High Hopes. I never heard it. All right, here's the Bernie Sanders list. Here we go. The number one song that he plays as he comes up on the stage. Brooklyn Go Hard. You know that song, Milo?
No.
Dennis?
No.
The rap song?
Yes. Very good.
It's a Lil Wayne and Jay-Z.
I would give you credit for half of that.
Hang on. It's Lil Wayne.
No.
Oh, no. It's okay. Hang on. Brooklyn We Go Hard. It would Jay-Z and Swiss Beats?
Jay-Z and Santa Gold.
Oh, Santa Gold.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Now, this is a song I've actually seen Milo dance to. that's on the Bernie Sanders. Back in the day, Milo Samardzija, they put this song on, and Milo, I got to get up and dance. Disco Inferno. You know that song?
Of course. Disco Inferno.
Yeah, of course.
Bam, baby, bam.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, you're going to ruin my reputation.
Yeah. Man, his dancing ruined his reputation.
So far, Milo's got a tattoo on his ass. Yeah. He sings songs. That's great.
Panic at the Disco Inferno.
Disco Infatuation.
All right, so that's the song he plays. Right. And here we go. Runaway.
But you know, you get it, though, right? Burn, baby, burn. Bernie Sanders. Whoa. I knew he didn't get it.
I knew he didn't get it. Mind blown.
Get me the bong on that one. I did not. Right over my head. Milo, did you get it?
No.
Okay.
You got to feel the burn.
You got to feel the burn. All right. Another song in the Bernie Sanders playlist, Runaway, You and I. Joshua, please.
Runaway, You and I.
I've never heard of it.
Rap song?
I have no idea.
Runaway, You and I.
Who's the artist?
Galantis. I've never heard of Galantis. Anybody in this room heard of Galantis?
The only Runaway I know of is from the late 50s, I think.
Del Shannon,
yeah.
Run away. I think that's on Joe Biden's list. I'm just kidding.
There's a Ludacris song, Runaway.
Is there? Yeah. All right. And this song, Milo definitely knows. Milo and I are the only people in this room that know this song, America by Simon and Garfunkel.
Ooh.
It was actually Bernie used that in his campaign ads back in the day. Milo, feel free to sing a snatch.
I know the song, but I refuse to sing it.
Okay, it's a great song. Here we go. Uprising by Muse. Anybody heard that song?
Yeah, isn't that there's like a slow build to it. It's like We Will Be Victorious, I think, is like the lyrics in it. I can't sing it. Sorry. I'm not very helpful at this game.
finally, I'll close with this one from Bernie Sanders. I love this song immensely. Let's see if our millennials have ever heard of it.
Oh, no.
Power to the People.
Oh, by Public Enemy?
Well, they riffed on it. Isn't that what that is? The original Power to the People, Young Dennis?
It's funny you say if the millennials can... they tuned out like 20 minutes ago.
This is too old.
John Lennon.
Very good. John Lennon.
Okay.
All right. And finally, two candidates have the same song, Lovely Day. You like that song? A Lovely Day by Bill Withers. One of the great songs of all time.
That's nice.
Oh,
that's
my
nice
goodness. One. Dennis, would you sing
Milo, you know the song.
Yes, you do.
Know it.
Lovely Day. They play it at the bowling
alley.
Cory Booker has... Cory Booker's list is very similar to...
if I'd have known they had such terrible singers on their show, I might have made some other plans.
Not doing any of these songs
Elizabeth
justice.
Warren.
We should name this segment "We're Idiots." We're just singing and not knowing anything.
But we're a lot smarter than that. All right. Anyway, I want to thank
good songs.
Joshua Smizer De Leon for coming on the show.
The legendary
Milo Samardzija for coming on the show. Lisa Solomon was here earlier in the day. And, of course, the man, the myth, the legend. And Milo, as you know, back home in his native Alton, they call him White Lightning. Dr. D, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Have a safe and healthy Happy New Year's, everybody. See you on Thursday.
And remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows and Benny J bonus interviews at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and wherever else you download your favorite podcast. And you really need to download the top five Chicago and or Illinois stories. We're going to be recording it as soon as we get done here, and it'll be available tonight at both Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Reader websites, wherever else you download your favorite podcasts. You know the deal. So check it out. We'll see you next year. It's been a great 2019.
That's correct.